From the spy analyst, Islamic NATO, the Saudi-Turkey-Pakistan Defense Pact. America didn't see it coming. A new power triangle is forming in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Turkey are suddenly huddled together. The headlines call it a historic alliance. The intelligence community calls it something else entirely. And once you see what they see, you won't be able to unsee it. Picture this. In a secure briefing room somewhere far from the cameras, an intelligence analyst is staring at a map of the Middle East, red lines connecting Riyadh, Islamabad, and Ankara. A new pact, a new bloc. Some commentators have already reached for the most dramatic label they can find, an Islamic NATO. And yet, that analyst isn't reaching for the panic button. Not because the development isn't real. It is, but because they know something the breathless headlines don't, the mechanics running underneath this alliance, the desperation fueling it, and the fault line waiting to snap it in half the moment circumstances shift. This briefing is going to walk you through exactly what they see. Slowly. Completely. Because every single detail here matters, and by the end, you'll understand this region better than most news anchors currently reporting on it. Let's begin at the beginning, with a mission that quietly failed before it ever made the news. Rewind a few months to the height of the confrontation between the United States, Iran, and Israel. In the middle of that firestorm, Pakistan quietly volunteered itself for a very specific job, mediator, the self-appointed bridge between Washington and Tehran, the country that would step in, calm two furious nations down, and walk away looking like a global statesman. If you want the full breakdown of exactly why this mediation attempt was structurally doomed from day one, the piece-by-piece reasoning that called this outcome months in advance, go back and read our previously published posts from when the U.S.-Iran-Israel conflict first erupted. Everything that has unfolded since has followed that script almost exactly. And here's what this move wasn't about, contrary to what many assumed watching from the outside. This had nothing to do with Pakistan trying to elevate its international standing, polish its image as a global peacemaker, or earn itself a seat at the grown-ups' table of world diplomacy. Strip away that flattering assumption entirely. It was about cash. Pakistan's economy has been standing on the edge of a cliff for a long time now. Inflation eating away at ordinary lives, foreign reserves stretched thin, debt piling up faster than it can be serviced. For a government in that position, playing trusted middleman between two furious global powers wasn't about honor. It was a lifeline strategy. Broker a deal, collect goodwill, collect financial support, buy a few more months of breathing room for a collapsing economy. There was just one catastrophic problem. The mediation never worked, not even close. To understand why, you need to understand what each side actually wanted, because their goals were fundamentally incompatible, and no amount of shuttle diplomacy was ever going to bridge that gap. The United States wanted a very specific, very aggressive outcome from its confrontation with Iran, forced regime change, achieved through overwhelming military pressure. Break the regime, replace it. That was the real objective sitting underneath the official diplomatic language. Iran, meanwhile, wanted the mirror image outcome, the complete expulsion of American military presence from the Middle East once and for all, push the Americans out, end the era of U.S. bases dotting the region. Neither side got what it wanted. Washington did not achieve its regime change objective. Tehran did not achieve its expulsion objective. And that left both capitals in a very specific, very dangerous emotional state. Fuming, humiliated, and directionless. Not defeated exactly, but stuck. Each side had spent enormous resources, taken enormous risks, and had nothing clean to show for it. That kind of frustrated stalemate is precisely the environment where smaller, opportunistic players smell an opening. And Pakistan smelled one immediately. Before we go further, it's worth rewinding even earlier, because the roots of this entire regional scramble stretch back to a single date that most casual coverage of the Islamic NATO conveniently skips. October 7, 2023, the day Hamas launched its attack on Israel. What followed, by most independent tallies, was one of the most devastating military campaigns in the region's modern history. Israel answered terror with what amounted to a wholesale leveling of the Gaza Strip, a leveling that, according to widely cited figures, left more than 70,000 Palestinians dead, a horrifying share of them, somewhere in the range of $20,000, children. Multiple ceasefire attempts were floated over 2 years of fighting, and multiple times they collapsed, with reports pointing to repeated strikes on Hamas's own lead negotiators as the reason talks kept falling apart. The pattern itself is the accusation. Whenever peace looked close, the negotiators themselves became the target, because, as regional critics have put it bluntly, the real objective wasn't a ceasefire at all. It was continuing the genocide. Then came the moment that actually rewired Gulf calculations for good, the moment that made it clear this genocide wasn't going to stay contained inside Gaza's borders. On September 9, 2025, a Hamas negotiating team wasn't hit in Gaza or in Iran. It was targeted inside Qatar, a neutral, sovereign Gulf state, in a strike that also killed a Qatari security officer. The world condemned the strike sharply and immediately. But inside the region, it landed as something closer to a warning shot than a scandal. If a sovereign Gulf host nation wasn't off limits, nobody was. And the uncomfortable follow-up question wrote itself. If Israel would strike inside Qatar and Washington, the region's self-appointed net security provider, wouldn't lift a finger to stop it or even openly condemn its own ally, who exactly was protecting the Gulf? And underneath that question sits an even blunter one that regional observers keep coming back to. Is Washington actually the one calling the shots here, or is it Jerusalem? Watch America's actual behavior across this entire saga. A strike inside a sovereign Gulf state it barely blinks at. A war where the lion's share of its munitions quietly get rerouted toward one ally, regardless of who else is left exposed. And the pattern starts to look less like an independent superpower setting its own agenda, and more like Washington dancing to Israel's tune. That's not a fringe theory in the region. It's close to the default read. That, not just the later Iran war, is the real ignition point behind the original September Saudi-Pakistan Defense Pact. Tellingly, the full text and terms of that agreement have never been made public to this day, but what can be said with confidence is that it functions as a NATO-style collective defense treaty, where an attack on one is treated as an attack on both. And when Pakistan's own defense minister was pressed afterward on whether the pact carried a nuclear protection clause, he notably declined to rule it out. Translation: under the right circumstances, Pakistan wasn't ruling out extending its nuclear umbrella over Saudi Arabia to defend it. Here's where the story gets genuinely fascinating, and this is the detail that should stop you in your tracks. This chapter opens in February, when the United States and Israel launched their joint offensive against Iran. Get the date and the opening move right, because it matters more than the vague framing "joint offensive" lets on. On February 28, 2026, Washington and Jerusalem launched coordinated strikes codenamed Operation Epic Fury and Operation Roaring Lion. And in the opening hours, they didn't just hit installations. They killed Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, 86, along with several senior,